It's Saturday, February 18th, 2006, and you're listening to the Typical PC User Podcast. Good evening, everyone. This is Victor Cahill from the Typical PC User Podcast, and I want to welcome you to a great Saturday show. I've got some wonderful guests tonight. David Malin from Harvard University is here. He's going to talk to you about web hosting. Douglas E. Walsh is going to give you some very practical advice as how to keep and store data. Also, Steve Walsh from the Lifespring podcast was gracious enough to send me a piece that I think is pretty important, especially to all us geeks. I'm going to also do a piece on a Microsoft USB flash drive manager. Plus, we'll have a little bit of humor, of course, from John Bell. Now, before we start the show, I want to let you know that next Saturday and the Saturday after, I'm going to be on vacation, but I'm going to be producing some small shows for you to have something out there. I'm going to be going to Honduras and Belize and Cozumel on a cruise. Hopefully, I'll do some sound scene and have some content that I can provide for you. Last year, when I went on vacation to San Francisco, I did some sound scene tours from the Muir Woods, and I got some very good feedback, although it was not technical content, if you will. So hopefully, I can do the same thing this time and wrap it around and wrap it into some content for the Typical PC User Podcast. Folks, I hope that you are enjoying this show. If you are, or if you're not, let me know at typicalpcuser@gmail.com. Your input is very valuable to this show. Also, I'm going to be making the show probably a little bit shorter from now on. I've been doing a half-hour format, and I think I want to stick it to around 15 minutes. Give me feedback between now and the time I get back from vacation. Do you want the show to remain at 30 minutes, or would 15 minutes be okay? Again, typicalpcuser@gmail.com. Your comments are welcome. Well, let's get going to a powerhouse show that I have tonight. Enjoy the show. Well, folks, for my segment tonight, I wanted to do a piece based on an email that George Starcher sent me. George is always sending me very good links. Of course, George is from the In the Trenches podcast at kevindevin.com. And this time, he gave me a really great one. It's called the Microsoft USB Flash Drive Manager Standard Edition, and it's a free application that you can get from Microsoft. Of course, I'll put a link to the show right in the show notes. And it's a really nice application. Basically, we know that USB flash drives are more and more prevalent in our daily lives. I mean, we've gone from being able to get a 256 meg one to where the other day I saw one at Sam's Club for $70 for like a 2 gig. So it's really becoming a viable option for saving all of your documents and carrying them with you, a lot of your email and carrying it with you, things like in your configuration for your wireless devices, some of your music. It's becoming very prevalent to do this. This Microsoft USB flash drive manager basically helps you, in one very small application, manage all of this different content. It lets you back up and restore presentations, pictures, songs, applications to and from your USB flash drive. And you can then take them with you. The application can also help you classify and name your USB flash drive images. For example, you can name a very specific image of a certain of all your documents and name it a very specific image name that can be restored someplace else. So it makes it really easy to just manage your overall flash drive capabilities without having to go in and do a bunch of manipulations, you know, at the actual file and folder level. The application is super easy to install. Once it is installed, you'll see a new icon. When you hit start, it'll say Microsoft USB Flash Drive Manager. That will take you to a tabular layout. Here is where you can do all the work. On the overview, you have a bunch of basically wizards that let you do things like view and copy your files and label your USB drive. It lets you back up and restore with basically one click. It lets you modify the properties of the USB flash drive that you're using. It lets you manage the library of several different backups, so you can have multiple backups depending on space. And it also lets you do something called the Wireless Network Setup Wizard. And the Wireless Network Setup Wizard basically is going to take you through some steps where it's going to, right from here, take you through your normal wizard for setting up your network, but save your configuration into your USB flash drive. So if you lose that configuration in your regular computer, you can have a backup copy of it right there in your USB flash drive. It also has several other tabs where you can do things like copy files and you know, put them over to the flash drive or copy them from your flash drive back. It has the full backup and restore function where you can take, you know, the entire images that you have saved of a group of files, and you can, again, move them back and forth between the flash drive and your computer. And then it has properties tabs, manage library tabs, and those types of things. It is a very good utility. It's free. It's from Microsoft. And I want to thank George for sending me the email, turning me on to it, because I loaded it. And even though I have a very small flash drive, only a half a gig, it sure helps me manage that very well. So, George, thanks a lot. And guys, I hope you've enjoyed the segment. Steve Webb from the LifeSpring podcast has a very important message for us to hear. We're always so busy and always on our computers, and I think this message, for me, it sure hit home. I think it'll hit home for you too.
Hi, Victor. Steve Webb here with the LifeSpring family of podcasts over at LifeSpringPodcast.com. You know, you do a great job here with your show. You really perform a great service helping folks to use their computers a lot more effectively. Well, I got to thinking that one thing that lots of us need to know about the effective use of a computer is when to step away from the computer. And I'm including myself in this too. Lots of us tend to really get into what we're doing with these little boxes of plastic and silicon. We love surfing the internet. We love creating music or writing or gaming or even creating podcasts. So much so that sometimes we forget that we have a wife or a husband or kids or another significant other who needs our attention. Let's remember that a computer is just a tool. It's not our life. The people in our lives are the ones who need us. We need to remember that work will still be there when we come back to the computer. But lost moments with our loved ones can never be recovered. We only get one chance at living each moment. Are we spending enough of those moments with our loved ones? Hey, thanks, Victor. Keep up the great work, and God bless you. I've got to go spend some time with my kids.
This is Ernie Kunchbard, geek extraordinaire from the Bells in the Bat Free podcast. Want to know how to avoid carpal tunnel syndrome? I'll tell you in just a second.
Politics and scandal are just two of the buzzwords we'll use to try to entice you to listen to the Bells in the Bat Free podcast. Here's Arnie.
To avoid carpal tunnel syndrome.
Wait, avoid what?
Carpal tunnel syndrome.
Slower, please.
Carpal tunnel syndrome.
Oh, I gotta go ahead.
Take your keyboard and cut it in half, right between the T and the Y, the G and the H, and the B and the N. Take the left side of the keyboard and Velcro it to the left side of your chair. Take the right side of the keyboard and Velcro it to the right side of your chair. Then let your hands dangle naturally and start typing. End of carpal tunnel syndrome.
What?
Carpal tunnel syndrome. See, your hands won't hurt no more.
Okay.
I'm Ryan Kunchbard. More next week.
Douglas E. Welch from the Career Opportunities Podcast gives him some incredible insight about documentation and keeping our backup disk.
This is Doug Welch of Career Opportunities, the high-tech career handbook, at welchwrite.com/career. There's a chronic problem faced by many of my clients, and I assume it affects nearly everyone who buys a computer. In our excitement to start using a new computer, we forget entirely about the disks and manuals that came with it. When we open up the new computer, it looks so perfect, so complete. Like a new car, we don't want to have to think about oil changes, tire pressure, or anything else. We just want to get in and drive. Unfortunately, in our joy, we often forget to put the owner's manual in the glove box. Now, fast forward a year. Your computer is acting a bit strange. Maybe you've been infected by some spyware, or perhaps, horror of horrors, your hard drive has failed. It happens. Fixing these issues is probably going to require the recovery disks that came with your computer. But where are they now? Without the physical CDs that came with your computer, you're in for a very nasty surprise. You're going to have to work with your computer manufacturer to get a replacement disk, or go out and buy a brand new copy of Windows. Ouch. Even worse, your computer may have come with a disk of drivers and applications. This software is often needed to allow your modem, network card, screen, CD burner, or other devices to work with Windows. If this disk is missing, you'll have to find some way to download the drivers from the web, but the bundled applications are probably gone forever. So, how do you prevent this problem, even years after you buy your computer? The answer is actually quite simple. Look around your house, find a nice sturdy box, and designate it the computer box. This will hold every disk, every manual, every extra cable that enters your house. With my clients, I often use the keyboard box that came with the computer. It's a decent size and usually has a lid that can be closed. It doesn't really matter what you use, though, as long as you have one box, one place to look for items when you need them. It could be a file box, plastic tub, whatever you have on hand. Now, instead of having to search everywhere for disks or manuals, you have one place to turn for all your needs. There's no need to worry about categorizing or filing the information in the box. I find that the simple chronological arrangement of new stuff goes on top works just fine. You probably won't remember the date you bought some piece of equipment, but you can usually remember that it was before the camcorder and after the cordless phone. Save yourself time, money, and frustration. Create a computer box today, use it to stash all of your computer-related items, and then put it somewhere accessible so you can find it whenever you need it. This simple action can go a long way towards improving your experience with all the technology that enters your home. You can check out Career Opportunities, the High-Tech Career Handbook, as well as our other podcasts, A Gardener's Notebook and My Word, at our website, welchwright.com.
Next, David Malin from Harvard University is going to talk to you about web hosting and everything you need to know to get going in that field. David, thanks once again for being part of the show.
Hello, my name is David Malin. I'm the instructor for Computer Science E1, Understanding Computers and the Internet, at Harvard University's Extension School. Victor asked me to speak to you today about how the Internet works. And in a previous segment, we've focused already on how home networking works, and more recently, how IP addressing and so forth works. So I thought today we'd take a more personal spin and answer the popular question of how do you go about setting up a website for yourself. Well, first and foremost, a lot of ISPs, probably Comcast and other large entities such as GeoCities.com and the like, do offer individuals the ability to host web pages on their servers. And usually you get a URL of the form www.geocities.com/username, where username is whatever name you've been assigned by GeoCities or Comcast or the like. Well, that might be fine if you don't care so much about having an internet presence, but it certainly doesn't look very professional, certainly doesn't look very personalized URLs like that. So the more obvious approach then, from something more personal or professional, is to actually purchase your own domain name, something like www.davidmalin.com or your own name, .com or .net or .org. Well, purchasing such a domain name these days is incredibly straightforward and relatively inexpensive. For instance, a popular registrar, as they're called, via which you can register domain names is www.godaddy.com, G-O-D-A-D-D-Y. In fact, you may have seen their rather unusual commercials during this past year's Super Bowl and elsewhere. Well, GoDaddy is a registrar, which means you can go to them and register domain names. Their typical fee is about $6.99, $7.99 per year, and that is essentially gives you the right to make use of the domain that you have purchased, for instance, www.davidmalin.com. Well, if you then want to actually host some web content at that particular address, you can do a number of things. GoDaddy is much more than a registrar. In fact, their website is rather replete, if not excessively so, with offers to pay for this service and buy that service and so forth. And it can actually be a bit overwhelming. But if you just plod through all of those screens and declining every sort of service except the actual domain registration, You will eventually, upon purchasing the domain name, will be able to configure your GoDaddy account. And you can do this via their web-based interface, and what you'll then need to decide is if you're going to host your website with GoDaddy or if you're going to host it elsewhere. Now, if this is a personal site, you can host personal websites incredibly inexpensively, if not for downright free these days, via such sites as erice.net, dreamhost.com, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of other possible hosts that can host your website today, all of varying prices, all of varying quality, all of varying performance. So it's really the sort of world in which you want to ask around and maybe go with some personal friends or colleagues' recommendation. Erice.net is one that we recommend in E1, and their URL is e-rice.net. And we recommend them to students only because they're so incredibly cheap. For something like $5 or $10 per year, you can actually host not only your website, but also obtain some number of email addresses in your domain so that you could have an email address like david@davidmalin.com or the like. Well, if you decide, for instance, to go with someone like erice.net, what you simply do in the GoDaddy interface, or probably in whatever interface your own choice of registrar has used, if you go with someone else, you specify in your GoDaddy account that you want to point davidmalin.com, for instance, to the DNS servers that are hosted by erice.net. And you would go to erice.net or look through their documentation as to what their appropriate DNS servers are, but essentially by updating GoDaddy's records and saying, "Hi, GoDaddy, even though I purchased davidmalin.com through you, I want you to route requests for davidmalin.com to the DNS servers hosted by erice.net." And what erice.net will do is, upon receiving a request for the IP address, recalling last time's discussion of IP addressing in DNS, well, erice.net will respond with the IP address of their web server, or the web server on which your particular website and email happens to be hosted. So you have this sort of intermediary currently in the form of GoDaddy or the like that essentially map your domain name to the actual servers on which they are hosted. And you can do a whole bunch of other configuration options, particularly if you're feeling a bit adventurous, including CNAME records, ANAME records, MX records, and so forth, all of which are these somewhat arcane parameters that you can set that control where your email is actually delivered, where your website is actually directed. But most of those features are for the truly savvy and certainly aren't necessary in order to get yourself up and running on a website. So in short, if you step one, purchase your domain name, be it through GoDaddy or elsewhere is fine, and you should not need to spend more than $10 a year on these things, if not getting away with paying much less. Step two, you need to choose a host for your website and or email services. You can do that through GoDaddy, and I'm sure they will try to get you to purchase such as you plod through their screens, but there are many, many other places on the web that you can visit, erice.net, dreamhost.com, and a slew of others. And then step three, once you've chosen your web host, you configure your domain name through your registrar to know about the DNS servers for your particular choice of web host. Step four is really then just to wait maybe a day or two for the changes to take effect, that they can sometimes start working much more quickly, and thereafter to start uploading your HTML pages and files and so forth, configuring your email accounts to your local host. And for those kinds of details as to how to do that, you would simply read the documentation from the choice of web hosts that you've made. Well, my name again is David Malin. I'm the instructor for Computer Science E1 at Harvard University's Extension School, and I hope you've enjoyed this brief overview of how to get yourself up and running on the web with your own website and email accounts. And certainly, if you have any questions, feel free to drop me a note directly at Malin, M-A-L-A-N, at post.harvard.edu. Many thanks to Victor for having me on again today. Take care.
Well, folks, that's it for tonight. That's about a 20-minute show, so that'll give you an idea of what the show would be like a little bit shorter. I hope you've enjoyed tonight's content. I want to thank David Malin from Harvard, Douglas E. Welch from the Career Opportunities Podcast, of course, Steve Webb from LifeSpring Podcast for being part of the show. I love doing the show. I love doing it for you. And if you like the show, hope you go out to Podcast Alley and give me a vote. I think I've dropped to like 58 this month, and I'm usually like 15th. So get out there and give me a vote if you like it. For now, this is Victor Cahill, the Typical PC User Podcast, saying enjoy.